WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
Good afternoon, Mid-Michigan. I bet you wish this was Al Martin, but it's not. Bum, bum, bum. No, it is not. It's Alex Scharg, the guy behind the glass, the man, the myth, the legend that Al often calls. That's right. I will be filling in for Alex. He's looking fine and dandy with his Jemele Hill interview right outside the MSU Union. He's probably got a nice little bow tie, probably a nice colorful shirt, that, you know, that Al Martin swag, as he always says. So good for him. And you know what? We're still going to have some fun on the air. Don't be too worried. Maybe I'll pull a, hey, good people. Maybe you might think it's Al. Get a little bit of a memory for you. But no, I'll go with what's going on Mid-Michigan and those outside of Mid-Michigan, all the fam listening at home. But coming up on this Current Sports, MSU football taking on Wyoming on homecoming. That and a whole lot more. But it's headliners first.
Friday Night Lights in the Lansing area as Holt travels to Lansing-Sexton for a Friday night matchup. Other area games include DeWitt at St. John's, Eden Rapids at Lansing Catholic, Portland at Williamston, and East Lansing at Lansing Everett. In high school soccer, Jackson defeated Lansing Everett in overtime on Wednesday 3-2. Brothers Nick and John Crater connected for two goals for Jackson, the second, the OT game winner. This weekend, Midland travels to Holt for a non-conference matchup. The number 9 Spartans welcome the Wyoming Cowboys to Spartan Stadium on Saturday at noon for the homecoming game. MSU defeated Eastern Michigan last week 73-14. The Spartans are favored to win by 4 touchdowns against the Wyoming Cowboys. Both MSU and Wyoming have losses to Oregon on their record already. The Spartans lost 46-27, Wyoming 48-14. In other Big Ten football news, University of Michigan plays the Minnesota Gophers at the Big House tomorrow at 3:30 p.m. The Wolverines lost last week to Utah 26-10. Northwestern travels to Happy Valley to play Penn State tomorrow as well at noon, and Maryland travels to Indiana for their first ever Big Ten game. Kickoff is set for tomorrow at 1:30 p.m. Other MSU sports this weekend: field hockey, women's volleyball, and men's and women's tennis are all in action today. Number 18 Michigan State field hockey plays host to number 7 Penn State today at 4 p.m. The volleyball team travels to Indiana. The game can be seen live on the Big Ten Network at 8 p.m. Men's tennis begins their fall season at the Western Michigan Invitational today in Kalamazoo. That tournament will go on all weekend. Finally, the women's tennis team travels to Evanston to take on the Northwestern Wildcats at the Wildcat Invite. Max Scherzer earned his 18th win as the Tigers moved one game closer to a Central Division title last night with a 4-2 victory over the Minnesota Twins. Scherzer went 6 innings, striking out 9 and allowing both Twins runs. Victor Martinez carried the Tigers, going 3-for-4 with 2 RBIs, coming on his first inning home run. Miguel Cabrera bounced back from a 4-strikeout day on Wednesday, hitting a solo home run in the 4th inning. The Tigers' magic number is now 2, with the Royals beating the White Sox last night. Detroit continues their 4-game set with Minnesota tonight at 7:08 p.m. The Lions hope to display the same stingy defense they played against the Packers as they take on the Jets this Sunday. While the defense has been a point of conversation all year, the Lions and head coach Jim Caldwell are, quote, concerned about wide receiver Calvin Johnson after he sat out of practice all this week. Said Caldwell, quote, "Any time that someone doesn't practice, particularly when it's not just a day of rest, which we would indicate on the medical report, there's always some concern. Johnson, however, is not quite so worried. Quote, I'm not concerned about it. When those things happen, you get in here and work and work and work until those things get right." Detroit kicks off at New York, 1 o'clock Sunday. The Red Wings got revenge for an overtime loss earlier this week when they beat the Chicago Blackhawks 3-2 last night. The game was delayed nearly 45 minutes after plane issues caused the Hawks to show up to the rink late. Tomas Tatar, Tomas Nosek, and Andres Nastrasil each scored a goal for the Wings, and Justin Abdelkader contributed 2 assists. Detroit plays again tomorrow night against the Boston Bruins at 7 o'clock. Charlotte Hornets forward Jeffrey Taylor was arrested in East Lansing last night. The incident occurred at the East Lansing Marriott, and Taylor was charged with one count of domestic assault, one count of assault, and one count of malicious destruction of property. His bond is set at $5,000. Those are your current sports quick hit headliners for September 26th. Now back to Alex to start the show. Phone lines are now open.
That's right. Phone lines are now open. 517-355-9527. Again, 517-355-9527. If you're just tuning in right now, I'm Alex Sharg, the man behind the glass. Spiffy and nice Al Martin is getting a nice interview with Jamel Hill, ESPN's very own Jamel Hill right now at the MSU Union. So he will be doing that today while I'll be entertaining Mid-Michigan and others here on AM 870. As you heard from our very own Andrew Hayes, who is a student helping out with the show this semester, lots of different news going on in the sporting world today. And he touched on it a little bit, but for those of you who were tuned in last night with the MLB playoffs looming and you hear all the games that Derek Jeter is honored at left and right, but did you see the walk-off last night from Derek Jeter? The Yankees faced the Orioles, and in the ninth inning, bottom of the ninth, one out, Derek Jeter knocks the runner in from second to beat the Orioles 6-5. Orioles now with Buck Showalter, a pretty competitive team. Not the typical Orioles from 08, 07, even Ripken era, but this is an Orioles team that definitely made noise, probably surprised every single analyst out there this year. And Jeter finishing 2-for-5 with 3 RBIs. He gets the Gatorade shower from CC Sabathia and other Yankee teammates. And just a picture-perfect night for Derek Jeter. And everyone's talking about it. You see the Gatorade commercial. I'm sure there'll be another Gatorade commercial with him dumping the thing on his head. So just a picture-perfect night for Derek Jeter. And we didn't touch too much on the headlines, but it's just something that has to be brought up. And every other sports show you tune into today, they're going to be talking about it, the legacy of Derek Jeter and what it means to Yankee Nation and what he meant to the city. And he talked about it in his interview. And let's hear some of the words that he said with ESPN.
It was tough. You know, it was tough. I was emotional, extremely emotional on the field. I'm trying to hold it together. If the game would have ended how it was looking like it was going to end in the top of the ninth, then I don't think I'd be able to control myself, but the emotion changed pretty quickly from being sad to being pretty excited.
Yeah, bittersweet feeling there from Derek Jeter, but overall, just some quick thoughts on this. This wasn't a gimme pitch. I know so many people, I see it on Twitter, you know, that would happen to Derek Jeter, and people tweeting out, of course, they gave him a nice pitch, they wanted to end it in a nice fashion, that would happen. For me personally, though, I'm not buying that was a gimme pitch whatsoever. This wasn't an Adam Wainwright pitch at the All-Star game when they quote-unquote grooved the pitches. Certainly a fair pitch. You saw the outfielder. They tried to get Antoine Richardson from the Yankees out from second at home. It was definitely a pitch that wasn't right down the middle. It was an RBI to right field. They turned it the other way. This wasn't a gimme pitch. And don't pity Derek Jeter here. Are my thoughts and concerns with the Derek Jeter walk-off. But overall, great pitch from Derek Jeter. Some other big headliners that we actually didn't get to this week. Al and myself, we talked a little bit about the Tigers' woes during the week and somehow them slipping into the playoffs. But earlier on in the week, there was some scuffling between the Chicago White Sox and the Detroit Tigers on Wednesday. And Al and I did not touch on it just because of all the national headlines with domestic abuse, which, cough, cough, actually happened again in East Lansing last night. We'll get to that in a second. But with the Detroit Tigers on Wednesday, Chris Sale, all-star pitcher, left-hander, big 6'6", Chris Sale, he hit Victor Martinez with the pitch. I think this was about the fifth or sixth inning, if I'm not mistaken. And when he got hit with that pitch, the benches cleared. Victor Martinez thought he was targeting, and there were some quotes that came out last night from White Sox manager Robin Ventura, and Ausmus called, basically said that it was weak of Sale to go ahead and throw the pitch at Victor Martinez. But Robin Ventura came out last night and said, quote, "I know Chris is not weak. I know that. If I know anything, he's not weak and we don't do weak things. And Chris doesn't do weak things. Osmond should probably worry about his own team and invest a little more in his own team. Don't worry about my team." Now, this all started when Sale accused the Tigers and V-Mart of sealing pitch signs. Apparently, Victor Martinez somehow read some of the pitches, got a couple hits off Sale. And it's reported by Fox that Chris Sale pointed to center field. Now, I didn't watch this game, so I don't know if this was true, but Fox says that Chris Sale pointed to center field and kind of gave like a little nod, a little finger point, saying, you know, thanks a lot for that. That apparently the center fielder was kind of watching V-Mart, apparently, and saw what V-Mart was looking for, and apparently Sale ordered for a pitch outside. It was an inside-up pitch to V-Mart, and he just looked totally unexpectedly weak on that pitch. We can call Sale weak, but maybe V-Mart weak on that one. But I guess V-Mart was expecting a certain pitch, and Sale and the center fielder kind of communicated on that, reporting by Fox Sports. But overall, with these comments from Ventura about how Chris isn't weak and to worry about your own team, I mean, what is Osmond supposed to say? I mean, what's Osmond supposed to say? I don't know. I guess that V-Mart was right, or V-Mart should have cleared the bench. He's got to protect his own player. I mean, the question was asked. He's not going to say, "Oh, you know what? Victor was wrong. He hit the pitch. Chris Sale was right. It's his own teammate. What do you expect him to say?" So that's my little opinion on that. And Ryder Cup update. Ryder Cup tied. I think actually, Aaron, if we have an update, that I think Europe is now up. But I was just on Twitter a second ago, and I see a tweet that says, "Holy crap, Rory," on Twitter. Apparently, Rory McIlroy hit a huge putt. You've heard his name left and right for Team Europe in the Ryder Cup. And they're now tied. I think they're tied. Aaron, do we have an update on that? Not yet. Okay, it's 3-2 Europe. But Rory McIlroy and Sergio Garcia, last I checked, one up through 13. I'll get another score update right here for you. But aside from our quick hit headliners, that's what's going on in the sporting world. You can call about anything on today's show. In a second, I'll give you kind of my looming topic for today, and it has to do with college football. But 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. If you're just tuning in, I'm filling in for Al Martin today. I'm Alex Sharg, the guy usually behind the glass, venturing out. I'll try to throw in some alisms here and there when needed. The Hey Good Peoples and the Be Easy. I'll end it with the Be Easy. But So coming up on today's show, just a quick little preview before we get into our first topic. MSU football preview versus Wyoming. We're talking also other Big Ten games over the weekend, from Indiana upsetting Missouri, which was pretty crazy to see. Michigan, Minnesota, Ohio State, all kinds of teams. Kirk Cousins last night. There was a big article written by Adam Schefter earlier this week about Spartan NFL QBs and the Spartan QB factory. Kirk Cousins last night did not live up to that article whatsoever. But we'll talk about Kirk Cousins and MSU quarterbacks after the break. Number two, we'll get into the Tigers game last night, some MLB awards for the season. Will Victor Martinez compete for MVP? Also, as well, Reflection Friday. I mentioned this a little bit earlier when I talked about abuse, but right here in East Lansing, some more abuse charges coming out from an NBA player that was in town, Jeff Taylor. I'll tell you a little bit more about that towards the later half of the show. And then football pick'ems. Andrew Hayes will probably pop in here in that second half, and we'll go over some of the games from the NFL and the Big Ten. But to kick off the show, and also we might be expecting an MSU women's soccer player. That's Courtney Clem. She might be coming on actually in a few minutes. If not, we'll get her on next week, but I'll keep you updated with that. But just to start, basically an MSU football preview. They take on Wyoming tomorrow for homecoming. That's at 12 p.m. That's going to be aired, I believe, on ESPN2. But MSU takes on Wyoming tomorrow. And they came off a big dominant win against Eastern Michigan, 73-14. And a lot to look for this game, homecoming. I can't believe that, honestly, that homecoming, I don't know about you, Aaron, but I don't remember the last game homecoming wasn't against a Big Ten team. Unbelievable. I don't think anybody here is coming in and saying, yeah, I want to see Wyoming. Yeah. I mean, they're here for homecoming. They want to see Big Ten football. And Al and I got into a heated debate earlier this week about scheduling non-conference games and if it's two or three is too much. I mean, EMU, Wyoming, Jacksonville State, three probably blowout games. You could argue that Wyoming isn't really a blowout, but between Eastern and Jacksonville State, two big blowoff games where Michigan State completely dominated. And if that's too much, and if, you know, if Michigan State didn't have this game against Wyoming for homecoming, that should be against a Big Ten team. And the other question I have is, this is more for MSU, why is homecoming September 26th? I mean, the last couple of years, it's been October, October 12th, October 10th, 11th. I don't know why homecoming got moved up to September 27th, 26th weekend. You talk about homecoming, you're coming home. It's not the first, second week of school. I mean, some of these students are just settling in. It's still September. Some students don't even know where their classes are still. So I don't really understand why it's September 27th and it's homecoming, but regardless, MSU football with the big game this weekend and a lot to look forward to. Jeremy Langford, his ankle injury, will that hold up? How will MSU pick apart Wyoming? Other than that, there's a lot to look forward to. And I'm going to get Andrew Hayes in here right now, and we'll kind of debate all show about some of the issues with Big Ten football and some of the upcoming games and whatnot. But basically, my first thing to look forward to is Jeremy Langford, running back out of Michigan State. Had a big ankle injury against Jacksonville State. He came out of the game, didn't play too much. Still was pretty dominant when he was in, but in Eastern, after the Eastern Michigan game last week, Jeremy Langford did say that his ankle was a little bit sore, but now he says it's 100%, according to MLive.com with Mike Griffith. Apparently, Jeremy Langford has 100% health coming into this game versus Wyoming. Not that it really would matter, in my opinion, but I guess that's good. But overall, he's got 100%. And my big question is, with Jeremy Langford in the running game, does it even matter? And Andrew Hayes now joins me. I mean, you got Delton Williams and Nick Hill, both with over 100 yards, Hayes. And rushing ranked 34th nationally. Obviously, pretty successful so far. What are you looking forward to in Wyoming? And is running an issue with Langford whatsoever?
Honestly, this year I am so happy with the way that Nick Hill has progressed. Because for the past few seasons, he's a shifty back. He's one of those little, to use an outdated term now, he's one of those scat backs. The guy, I mean, he's just, he hides behind the tackles and runs hard for a guy his size. But his biggest bugaboo has always been not holding on to the football. He fumbles like it's his job.
Well, has he fumbled this year that much?
But this year he's been figuring it out.
So hold your horses there, sir.
So no. That's I'm talking progress here. I'm happy that the fumbles are gone. So I don't think Langford needs to be at 100% against Wyoming. I think he needs to be 100% in order for Big Ten play to go well this year. But yeah, I think Michigan State can sneak past Wyoming with Nick Hill at the helm.
See, I totally disagree. I don't think they're going to sneak past. I think they are going to completely run past Wyoming.
Yeah, that was some sarcasm there with the sneak pass.
All right, well, you know, first of all, with Wyoming, just to give a little info for those listening, again, if you're just tuning in, I'm Alex Sharg, the guy usually behind the glass, filling in for Al Martin, who has an interview with Jamel Hill from ESPN's Numbers Never Lie today at the MSU Union. So I'll be giving you some alisms, some hey, good people, some be easy people, the best I can. But yeah, so a little bit of background on this Wyoming team, and feel free to call in 517-355-9527. Again, 517-355-9527. A little background on Wyoming. Their quarterback, Colby Kirkegaard, he's a senior, but it's his first year. So kind of we saw that Keith Nichols situation, you know, kind of a senior getting his first start, you know, kind of sticking with the program. And Michigan State's Tyler O'Connor and Damian Terry might have a similar situation in years to come. So Colby Kirkegaard so far, his first year starting, 57% pass completion rating. Wyoming defense, we're talking about running game. They're actually in the top half of the NCAA statistically in total yards allowed in defense, Hayes. I did not know this, but 370 average yards per game. They played Oregon. Oregon ran them up the field. They let up 48 points against Oregon. But still, I mean, top half defense, some solid runners. They have a tandem of dual running backs that can make some noise. A pro-style offense, you know, that typical West Coast offense that Michigan State and the, you know, five of the eight Big Ten teams, or, you know, five of the eight major Big Ten offenses run. So this will be, I think, a nice little test for Michigan State to kind of preview what they'll be seeing with Nebraska, that power football that Nebraska runs, and you know, maybe some of that typical, you know, Penn State, Iowa offense they might be seeing, although Iowa spreads that a little too. But, you know, I think this will be a good test for them. But that's just a little background on Wyoming, Hayes. Now, just, I guess we'll preview just to start with MSU offense versus defense. Who do you give the edge to, and will it really matter at all?
I don't think it matters too much which squad plays better. I think the MSU defense has to figure out what is going on, because they've gone from this team's cornerstone and what really drove them to a Rose Bowl last year, and they've kind of been an enigma this year. They don't really know where they're at. I know last week Al talked about the loss of Bulla being a major factor. I don't see that as an excuse. I know that Bulla did a lot for this team, but you got to be able to replace your guys. This is college football. This is not the NFL. And I think with the system that they run, they should be able to figure it out. And, you know, we've still got the man at the helm of the defense. His name is escaping me.
Tywan Jones?
No, the defensive coordinator.
Oh, Pat Narduzzi.
Oh, for the love of crime. I forget his name? Anyway, but, I mean, Pat Narduzzi still knows what he's doing.
And sure.
And I don't understand what has gone on. Maybe it's just a growing pains thing. They just need the new guys to come in and figure out their spot.
You know, when you mentioned Riley Bullock and the growing pains and if that will matter, well, coming in for Riley this week is Ed Davis, one of the probably undertailed linebackers in Michigan State, Detroit product, local product, had some Michigan in-state looks. So I'm looking for Ed to really step up and rise to the occasion, or rose to the occasion, as Michigan State often says.
Nice done.
But yeah, no, so I agree. I mean, I don't think Riley will be a huge factor, but for me, you saw it against Oregon, but the MSU offense just kind of walked over at the first half of that game. You know, the momentum was swinging their way. Connor Cook and Tony Lippett connected on every deep play they wanted, so I'm really looking for the MSU offense to get a big start early on. And on the defensive end, like you said, I'm looking to see if they don't blow any more coverages. I mean, yeah, Mark D'Antonio said, you know, with the 14 points against Eastern, those were just a couple gimme plays, poor coverage by MSU's defense, and so on. But overall, I mean, they really gotta make sure they get that defense nice and sound before. But just real quick, Hayes, we got a tweet actually from Bradley Allen about Wyoming. He said, quote, "Wyoming is like the Nebraska of the West, and September 26th is the October 11th of September, MSU homecoming." So I guess Bradley Allen really likes Wyoming to really rattle him. So there you go. If you want to tweet at us at WKR's Current Sports, or you can tweet at Al and I'll read him on the air. You can tweet at me at Alex Sharg, or feel free to call in 517-355-9527. I'll get my Al reference in here right now. Hey, this game, I think, is going to be cooler than the other side of the pillow. They overall will just walk over this Wyoming team. I don't really buy in the Nebraska of the West. You know, it's not like you're playing Stanford here. Nebraska's pretty good. I mean, undefeated right now. We'll get into them in a little bit. But moving on, before we get into some other Big Ten games, Hayes, I sat down on my couch last night, and I turned on my TV. I got home real late. I got home at like 10 p.m., I turn on the TV, I start watching the Redskins and Kirk Cousins kind of fall apart a little bit. Apparently in the first half, he was throwing really well. I missed it. I saw the highlights, but the second half, he fell apart. But also, I was switching between the UCLA-Arizona State game as well as the Oklahoma State game. Now, you're probably wondering, I saw you squint your eyes there and give you a little odd little turn of your face there, and why are we talking about UCLA and Arizona State? Well, for Michigan State football, their chances of making the BCS playoff heavily depend on Oregon running the table. We all know that. You know that, listeners, if you're just finding out. That's really the truth. I mean, they can't really, with the Big Ten's performance in week two, they really need to either A, dominate the rest of their games, as the Big Ten needs to dominate the rest of their games, because the conference right now is not making a stake in making that playoff. Or B, Oregon needs to prove that they are the best team in the land. We saw Florida State almost get upset last week. Very close game against Clemson with Jameis Winston out of the game. They somehow pulled it out. I cannot believe they pulled out that game. But so Florida State still number one, and Oregon really close there with that 3-2 spot rotating between polls. But overall, I mean, it really depends on how good Oregon is and how good that Pac-12 conference is. Now, I turned on this UCLA-ASU game, 10:30 kickoff. You know, I think 9:30, 10, I don't remember what time it started, but they kick off. And in the first 6 minutes of the game, Hayes, first 6 minutes, I see three penalties, two of them being personal foul, face mask and hands to the face, so very aggressive, a fumble, two drop balls, and it was just horrendous football. I couldn't believe that with USC, you know, kind of falling off tail end after 2 weeks back, I couldn't believe that the next best team in the Pac-12, being UCLA at number 11, was this bad early on. And it was sloppy play, Arizona State number 15. I mean, I get it. It's a close game. You could even argue rivalry game here. I mean, 11 versus 15, Pac-12, who's going to compete with Oregon at stake? And I was so surprised to see, Hayes, really how sloppy both teams looked. I mean, Arizona State, their quarterback was undercutting receivers, and it did not look for, I mean, I guess it's good and bad. My take is it's good because both of these teams probably won't have a chance against Oregon. Jim Moore's UCLA Bruins, they tallied the most penalties in NCAA football last year. But overall, there's not a shot at Oregon, which is good because Oregon will run the Pac-12, I believe, and can be a top team. But the bad part about this is that as much as Oregon might run the table, it doesn't make the Pac-12 conference look good at all. Now, what are your thoughts on the Pac-12, maybe based on what I told you? Maybe you've caught some games that I didn't catch, but when it comes to Michigan State football, it's looking really good for Oregon to run the table, I believe.
I didn't catch that game last night. I was watching the Blackhawks B team lose to the Red Wings B team in Detroit. Yeah, I didn't catch that game. See, honest to God, I gave up my hopes of a college playoff berth for Michigan State when they lost to Oregon. I don't think it matters at this point. I think Oregon can run the table. Michigan State can win the rest of their games, and Michigan State will still be out of that college playoff, even if they win the Big Ten championship, even if they have only that one loss and it's to an undefeated Oregon team, because the Big Ten isn't strong enough as a whole, and the Big Ten in general doesn't get much respect. It will be the Pac-12. It will be the SEC. It will be, I don't even know who else. Because the Big Ten is fighting for that respect. For some reason, a conference that is known as a football conference is, I don't know if it's because Ohio State and Michigan are down. That's what has just, because Ohio State and Michigan aren't winning the games that they used to. Therefore, everybody else is bad. I don't know why it is that the Big Ten can't get any respect, but I don't think it matters what Oregon does. I think Michigan State is going to have to deal with the Chick-fil-A Bowl or Beef O'Brady Bowl or whatever they get thrown into, because I really do think that loss to Oregon was the only shot that they had at making a playoff this year, and they squandered it.
All right, so Hayes and I both riding the Big Ten will make the college football playoff. Hayes is riding the Michigan State wagon. I think some team will. I think either maybe it's a Nebraska, a Michigan State, maybe it's Wisconsin, although they had that one loss against LSU, which wasn't pretty. But what do you think? And this is kind of the looming question of today's show. Does the Big Ten have any shot of making a BCS playoff game? Does any team in the Big Ten have a chance? 517-355-9527. If you watched the Pac-12 game last night, ASU-UCLA, did you think it was as sloppy as I did? And most importantly, what other teams will make this BCF playoff early on with an early on prediction here? We're going to hit a quick break, but when we return, more to talk about Big Ten games this weekend. We also have to talk about Kirk Cousins last night against the New York Giants, who the Lions dominated early on. And also, Tigers, a lot of MLB awards coming up soon, and Reflection Friday, we'll talk about domestic abuse here in East Lansing. Don't touch your dial or on your computer. We'll be right back. Alex Scharg on WKR Current Sports. Welcome back to AM 870's Current Sports. I'm Alex Scharg, the guy behind the glass, usually filling in for Al Martin as he's looking fine and dandy on his interview with Jemele Hill today from ESPN. Her and Michael Smith, I believe, are live from the union, the MSU union on campus. So Al's going over there to get some quick bites, and I think she's going to be airing on the Current Sports TV show, which is next Thursday at 10 p.m. So if you are listening and you're a big Current Sports TV fan, Jemele Hill will be on the show next Thursday at 10 p.m. You can tune in to WKR 10 p.m. every week for Current Sports Television. I'm joined by Andrew Hayes, a student working on with the show. And we just got done talking about some of the Big Ten chances of making the college football playoff. And I saw the UCLA-ASU game last night, and it just looked sloppy. Oregon really needs to run the table for Michigan State to do well. You've seen it left and right, but will they? I mean, what other teams can compete? Other teams that will make the BCF playoff A's? And I mean, let's just go off the bat. I mean, what about Texas A&M? I mean, they have a quarterback following Johnny Manziel that's setting records left and right. I mean, that team might have a better chance than anyone.
It's really, I think it's really impressive what Kevin Sumlin is doing down at Texas A&M. It almost makes the aura of Johnny Football less impressive, the way that he came in and kind of took over. But you see, they've got the same thing going on now at Texas A&M. Brand new quarterback, still a very successful offense, very successful team. And yeah, I think Texas A&M is one of the teams we can look at coming down the line. I think this is way out there, and it hurts my soul to say it, but I think Notre Dame has a shot because they're Notre Dame, and they always have a shot at being in a big bowl game because people want to watch Notre Dame, and they are the Yankees of college football. And I think they could have a shot. Looking at their schedule, I don't know if they can go undefeated, and they need to because their schedule is generally pretty soft. Despite their primetime matchup with Syracuse this week, I think it'll be an ACC, Pac-12, and SEC football final.
Yeah, those are definitely some of the top conferences. And actually, we just got a tweet in. Let's go back to our homecoming discussion, Hayes, on why this game is played on homecoming against Wyoming. Just not a great team to see. TJ Siegerlin says that homecoming is tomorrow because Nebraska's a night game and Michigan is never a homecoming game. Makes sense. MSU likes noon homecoming games. So I guess I do see that. You get your tailgating in the morning. People, you know, getting there off weekend. They don't want to pull too much of a late night game on homecoming. I can see that. You might have a little bit less participation. Look at that poll there. But yeah, no, I can definitely see that. But that comes back to the main point is, why do you schedule two blow-off games, a third blow-off game, and you have a bye week, and you're coming up to week five? So, I think it's still week four. Week four, right?
This is week five. Well, I don't know.
Get lost with all the days of the week. But, no, I mean, I just don't see that why it has to be, you know, three. You could argue three blow-off teams. And if this was such an issue with homecoming, then why not just schedule up a bad, not bad, but maybe a less competitive Big Ten team earlier on?
The whole Michigan State non-conference schedule is just terrible, and I don't understand why there's always that week two or week three bye week. It makes it almost impossible for me to get excited for Michigan State college football. Not that I don't eventually get excited, because Big Ten football is so much fun to watch, but it really is. It's a terrible way to start the season. You want to start it off with a bang, and obviously the Oregon game this year was a huge one, and they have been scheduling more of those quality non-conference games, mostly because Michigan State is a better team now, and they need those kind of wins outside of conference to bolster their BCS standings. Can I call it BCS standings anymore? Is that still a thing, or is it just the college playoff rankings?
You might be okay for now, but okay. You're walking on a thin line.
All right.
I don't know. The BCS guys might call in and tell you.
Yeah, I doubt that. There shouldn't be any more BCS supporters.
Anyway, but overall, I mean, I guess I see that. I guess it is technically week five, but overall, Hayes, I agree that there just needs to be a bigger Big Ten play overall. We can move on from this. I don't want to go back and forth. Every talk show is talking about how bad the Big Ten is. So let's move on to some other topics. Big Ten games, some other games this weekend. I guess we can kind of go down one by one and then talk about Michigan's QB controversy. There are plenty of fans, Hayes, of Michigan in the mid-Michigan area. Mm-hmm. And often I feel that on the show, you know, we go to Michigan State. We talk about Michigan State left and right, but now, Michigan deserves its fair share, as much as the tables may have turned that some people are saying, but Michigan has a big controversy. And you could argue the same kind of QB controversy Michigan State had when they were kind of between Cook and Maxwell, and they were looking at people were shouting Terry at the stadium to get him in there. Tyler O'Connor was in the mix. So we'll talk about Michigan's QB controversy in a second. But first, Maryland takes on Indiana. And I don't know about you, Hayes, I could not believe that Indiana took down number 19 Missouri on the road last week. I was shocked by that game.
I couldn't believe that. Indiana football is my go-to sad sack team. Like, when I'm comparing what's the worst thing or what's the worst team that we got going, well, at least they're still better than Indiana football. So now my world is just shattered.
You know, Hayes, you're talking about if you're better than Indiana football, that's kind of the bottom line. Well, Indiana football, honestly, is said by many to be a dark horse this year.
They've been getting better.
They have a phenomenal running back, 6'1", Tevin Coleman, 2 touchdowns a game, and yeah, they played Indiana State. They didn't play the best competition, but he did have 130 yards against Missouri, and that's a good team. That's a Big 12 team that's consistently every year is in the top 20, 25. So aside from that, yeah, they lost to Bowling Green State 45-42. But, I mean, they can make some noise, man. I mean, aside, if they get that defense together, they have all the offensive prowess that they need.
I mean, you can't sneeze at a Michigan or a Big Ten team, especially a lower tier, historically lower tier.
Right.
Big Ten team beating an SEC team on the road when, I mean, that was probably a game that Mizzou walked into thinking, well, this will be a nice warm-up before we start conference. Indiana's one that you're going to have to circle. Can't just overlook that anymore. And it'll be interesting to see how Maryland starts with their first appearance in the Big Ten.
Yeah, exactly. And Rutgers, we'll get to them in a minute, but another team that's looking to, you know, make a really big a big splash in the Big Ten to start their entrance into the conference. But overall, again, if you're just tuning in, I'm Alex Sharg. I'm usually behind the glass, but going to give you the hey, good peoples today, all the L-isms left and right as best as I can. And actually, I didn't really talk about this yet, but behind the glass taking my place today, we have WKAR's very own Aaron Young, who's the engineer of Current State. Aaron and I, if those of you listening remember a guy named Earl Robinson, I'm sure you do. I mean, 40 years of service here at WKAR's Current Sports. Aaron and I back in the day used to produce engineer for Earl. So it's a nice little reunion for the both of us, just like the good old days, as Aaron says, and good to have him behind the glass. But feel free to call in the looming question of the day. What are the chances that an MSU or any Big Ten team makes the BCS playoff? 517-355-9527. Again, 517-355-9527. You can also tweet me. We've been getting tweets left and right from a couple from Bradley Allen and TJ Siegerlin. But yeah, feel free to tweet at me, Alex Sharg, or Current Sports WKAR, and we'll get your tweets right on the air. If you're in your car on your radio, or if you're at home streaming us online, we'll get you on the air. But Hayes, Andrew Hayes, one of our students helping out with the show, is here with me right now. Who do you like in this Maryland-Indiana game? I think Indiana's going to pull it out, Hayes. I'm riding the Indiana train.
Absolutely. I'm always
we're agreeing all day today.
Absolutely.
That easy?
Well, I mean, I'm always inclined to take the home team, and especially with this being Maryland's first Big Ten game, even though Maryland, without a doubt, head and shoulders best uniforms in the Big Ten, which is saying a lot, I know, but Maryland's jersey's top notch. So yeah, I just don't see Indiana. That's a massive win for Indiana, and that's the kind of momentum that kind of shows a team, okay, we can do this. There's absolutely nobody else in the conference that's going to touch us.
They haven't beaten an out-of-conference team in years. I looked this up last night. I think it was 10 years since they upset a major top 20 out-of-conference team. So a big win for them. So aside from Maryland, Indiana, we're both agreement there. Let's move on to, in my opinion, is the most controversial game in college football right now. You saw it left and right. I remember I was on my computer the other day, and they're showing what happened on this day in sports. And I think it was on Wednesday. On that Wednesday, it was the same day that Cordell Stewart threw that Hail Mary in that Michigan-Colorado game. So obviously, even a lot of the media, the national media, is spinning and putting Michigan football out there in the spotlight. You saw the comments from Ron Bellamy and some former Michigan players about how Michigan just, you know, they got to keep it together. Some players are saying that everything's coming timbering down, which we had that Timber song right now. But yeah, so apparently everything's timbering down from here, and other people think otherwise. But there's a big QB controversy here, Andrew. And now with Minnesota, this is a team that shouldn't even be close. And it's funny that a lot of fans and a lot of media are picking Minnesota to beat Michigan amidst of this QB controversy.
I mean, Michigan's in free fall right now. They're full panic mode. Just listening and looking, I don't have too many connections to so many Michigan people being from Chicago, but it's pretty hectic over there in Ann Arbor, just from what I've seen. And so yeah, I think Minnesota's a good pick here. I can see why it's attractive to people. I'll say that. I don't know if I agree with it, but I can definitely see why that is attractive to a lot of picks.
Now with the QB controversy, there's this debate going on, Hayes, between Devin Garner or you're going with Shane Morris, the freshman, the true freshman that has gotten some playing time already. Now, Doug Nussmeier has came out. He's the offensive coordinator from Michigan. He said that they're going on a quote platoon style type thing. They're going to not play both. They're going to play with one while the other one sits. Now, if the game is 45 zip, then yeah, you're probably going to play the other quarterback. But they're going to stick with one quarterback. They're not pulling a Maxwell where you're going to throw. You know, you're going to pull Connor on his last drive of the game against Notre Dame. They're going to stick with one quarterback no matter what the score is, unless it's a blowout. Now, you know, Devin Garner, the fifth-year redshirt, being more of a scrambler, but with the pass protection Michigan has, Hayes, they have not kept that up. He's been sacked a lot just like last year. My opinion on this is I'm not buying that Devin Garner just needs a breakout game. I think he's been given many of chances. I don't think that he needs any more at this point. I think that he's shown that he's inconsistent with his throws. He's inaccurate. He's still missing receivers left and right. Regardless of how bad the offensive line is, he's still not. I mean, when he's venturing out of the pocket, he can't find the right hole still, Hayes. And at this point, yeah, you haven't played a Big Ten team yet, so they could potentially run the Big Ten table. I guess that's an option out there, but I kind of laugh at that. But overall, I think at this point, you kind of pull a Chad Henne move and you go with Shane Morris. And as a true freshman, you kind of, you know, you stick it for the long run. And I think if Hayes, if Brady Hoke shows that Morris has some progress and that if he can really get some game action and win a few, you know, win most of their games under Michigan, that I think that could actually help keep his job. And that if they move the quarterback out, that I think that shows that maybe it's Devin Garner that's been costing this team games. And maybe they're just trying to go in a new direction. What are your thoughts?
Well, Brady Hoke has been at Michigan so this is his fourth or fifth season. And Devin Garner was like, that was pretty much his first opportunity to pick a guy and say, this is the guy that I want running my football team. Because before that, Robinson was kind of a leftover before Hoke got there, still from the Rich Rod days. So I wonder if there's a certain amount of Hoke is just wants to see his guy do well and is just so reluctant to let that go that he's hurting his own football team. But I think it might, you know what? I think they got to stick with Gardner. At this point, Michigan football is bad right now, and I don't know if it's going to help. I don't know if it would help Brady Hoke bringing the new kid in, because what's that going to say? There's no win there. It's either, well, why didn't you do it sooner, or why'd you throw that guy in there in that situation?
Yeah, but you could argue that they waited just to see if it was for real, to give Garner some more reps. He's playing better teams. It's not no, you know, walk-off cupcake game. So I understand what you're saying, and you might as well stick with your QB at this point and so he doesn't take criticism sitting him. But, I mean, look what happened when Chad Henne played as a freshman. I mean, at that point, they had some controversy, some injuries with their senior quarterback. Name is coming off the head. I mean, that was years ago. That was, I think, 05, 06. But, I mean, they had some similar case of injuries. And I think Stephen Threet was a name that was thrown out. Stephen Threet might have been the name. Maybe our caller knows, who we'll get to in a second. But yeah, so like I said, yeah, I see what you're saying, Hayes, and that having Devin Gardner there does kind of supply Hoke some confidence that he did, you know, choose the right quarterback in his first 2 years at Michigan. But overall, man, I mean, I think the season's already bust with the Utah loss. I don't think, I mean, Utah has no namestay in out west, and I just don't see it, man. I think Morris, as a true freshman, he's shown some strides of brilliance. He's been somewhat more accurate, I think, than Gardner. And don't get him wrong. I mean, Shane Morris can be mobile, too. So that's something to look forward to. But again, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527 on WKAR's Current Sports. Again, I'm Alex Sharg, filling in for the pretty dapper Al Martin, who's getting his interview with Jamel Hill, host of ESPN's Numbers Never Lie and former Michigan State Spartan, on this homecoming. I wonder what they're going to say about Big Ten's chances as well. But let's get to a caller we have right now. And actually, I believe this caller was supposed to be a guest today on this Friday, so I'm glad he's calling in. Al didn't really relay to me that Matt, that this guy, ooh, I already gave the name away, that this guy would for sure be on. But we have our former WKAR Current Sports correspondent and co-host, Matt Ludke, from out west, out in California, in San Francisco. Maybe Matt caught some Pac-12 action himself. Matt, what's going on?
How are you doing, Alex? It's a pleasure to be back on. Sorry I'm calling so late.
No.
I figured it'd be better late than never.
Absolutely. Now, first of all, I just want to hear what you've been up to, and I know you went to that Oregon game. Maybe you have some comments on Big Ten chances of making the BCS playoff.
Oh, Alex, I have quite the Oregon story. I was intending on meeting my former roommate at Michigan State, who now lives in Elko, Nevada, which is a town no one has ever heard of in northern Nevada. We bought tickets the Tuesday before the game in the Michigan State section. Super pumped to go. I had to work that Friday, so I had to leave at about, 4, maybe 5 o'clock. And the thing about the West Coast and the West in general is that it is massive. You might think that a trip from San Francisco to Eugene wouldn't take too long. It is a 9-hour drive minimum with traffic. So I set off ready to go, hit traffic on the Bay Bridge, end up getting a flat tire on the Bay Bridge.
Oh boy. Well, that kind of sounds like a Matthew Stafford thing where he got kind of stuck under the bridge there in traffic for his workout. But, oh, my goodness, man. So you
Matthew Stafford might have been a bit more, had a bit bigger consequences. But so I get a flat tire. There is no 24-hour place that would not charge under $200 to get a new tire. So I did not end up making the trip.
Now,
the worst part is that my buddy, driving in from Nevada, didn't get to make the trip either because his car broke down in the desert. He was 75 miles from the nearest town and 20 miles from cell phone service. So he had to hitchhike pretty much all day. They ended up getting a ride in a cop car to a hotel. So it was more or less an unmitigated disaster, but having watched the game, seemed like maybe it was a blessing in disguise because it would have been super, super depressing after the way they finished the first half to have had to sit through that second half.
That sounds like something out of a movie, man, like kind of like a rat race situation. You're stuck in the desert, nowhere to go. You got to call, or maybe if you've ever seen that movie with, maybe you know this, Hayes, with Frankie Muniz, he kind of, the guy gets stranded in the desert. Big Fat Liar. Big Fat Liar. Yeah.
Amanda Bynes. Oh, yes. I remember that movie.
Yeah. You know, they get stranded in the desert. Urkel picks them up on the ride home. And that sounds, I can't believe anything. I've never heard a story like that ever, man. That's depressing.
And the thing is, I've never gotten a flat tire in my life. And my buddy has never had his car break down in his life. So it's just, it was a comedy of errors. It was just a terrible, terrible weekend.
Oh, my goodness.
That game included. But you know what? I think myself and the Spartans are ready to bounce back, you know, heading into this weekend and then Big Ten play.
Crap, man. I sure hope so. Well, do you think that the Big Ten has any chance of making the BCS playoff at this point?
Somebody's got to win out. Whether that's MSU or, you know, Nebraska or Penn State, even though I don't think Penn State has a prayer of doing it. I think they've got to have one loss tops. And I think MSU is really the only team that can have that loss and still go. I mean, losing on the road at Oregon is nothing to scoff at. Losing at home to Virginia Tech, who then turns around and loses to East Carolina in pretty horrific fashion, I don't think Ohio State can bounce back from that. So I think it's the Spartans or somebody going undefeated, and that's all the only chance they have.
Yeah, I like your thinking there. Now, I kind of went on a little rant earlier. I'm not sure how much you heard, but I kind of talked about how the Pac-12, the rest of the Pac-12 with UCLA, USC, ASU, I caught the game last night. They put up, you know, 80 points total from both teams. I just thought it was horrific performance. I can't believe that these defenses actually can field 11 players and still have a defense. I mean, they ran all over each other. And I thought
they do. It's almost the reverse of the Big Ten. I mean, you have all these playmakers at quarterback and absolutely no one who knows how to stop anybody.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, you know, you look at how MSU played against Oregon, and obviously Oregon, I think, is the cream of the crop. I think they're the best in the conference. I think Mariota is the best in the conference, too, because, I mean, you look at that game, you break it down, and Michigan State was just a few plays away, and they were plays that, you know, particularly that sack or that near sack and early in the third quarter, and Mariota just flips it to a guy for a huge gain. I mean, if you have a quarterback who can do that, he's going to make college defenses look silly. But, yeah, it is the Wild West out here. It's just points on top of points on top of points.
Listeners, we're joined by WKAR's very own Matt Ludke out west, who now has a job in sunny San Francisco. Matt, thanks for bailing me out and calling in here today, man. It was great to hear from you. Any other thoughts, concerns, words, stories?
Oh,
any more Wild
boy.
West stories?
Well, I heard you guys talking about Michigan a little bit earlier.
Yeah.
And I don't want to toot my own horn, but it was me last year who compared the Michigan Football Administration to the Dallas Cowboys. I think they might have surpassed the Cowboys in terms of just ineptitude.
Wow.
What a disaster. I kind of wish I could be there to relish it. But at the same time, I would not be surprised if they beat Minnesota.
Mm-hmm. I'm so glad that you're here to tell me this and not Al, because he'd probably throw a fit at you for his Cowboys.
That's true. That is true. And I'm sad I missed Al, because I would have wanted to see what his panic meter was at with the Tigers.
Oh, yeah. Well, we'll get you back in next week for sure.
Definitely.
Matt, thank you for calling in on AM 870 today. Man, what a throwback day. Aaron Engineering, Matt calling in. Matt, good job. How's the job going? Well?
Oh, it's going great. Going great. Love it. Everybody who's listening, go download Elevate Brain Training app.
All right.
You'll improve some skills. It's a lot of fun.
I'll look it up right now. Matt from sunny San Francisco. Matt Ludke, thanks for calling in, Matt.
Thanks for having me, Alex.
All right. Andrew, well, I can't believe how fast that flew by. 4 minutes now in the show. We got to kind of breeze through this stuff. We're not even going to get to the domestic abuse. You know, let's skip the Big Ten games. We kind of got our Michigan thing out there. All the other games are kind of runarounds. But anyways, let's kind of skip down to this Jeff Taylor domestic abuse charge. If you're just tuning in, again, I'm Alex Sharg, real quick, filling in for Al Martin, 5 minutes left. If you want to get a quick call in, 517-355-9527. But Jeff Taylor, an NBA player with the Charlotte Hornets, was in sunny East Lansing last night, and as much as San Francisco's sunny, it's been great here, Hayes.
It has been.
Weather's been unbelievable. It's going to be a great homecoming. Sunny skies, upper 70s tomorrow, so if you're looking for game day weather, there you go. But Jeff Taylor, a player for the Charlotte Hornets, was in town last night in East Lansing. The police arrived at 1 a.m. at the downtown Marriott Hotel, which I go to a lot because I go to Leo's Coney Island there. I'm a regular there. And at 1 a.m., they find Jeff Taylor, and he gets charged with one count of domestic assault, one count of assault, and another of malicious destruction of property. He had a $5,000 bond at East Lansing Court. And this guy, you know, he ruptured his Achilles tendon, sat out the year for the Hornets, drafted out of Vanderbilt. But Hayes, I mean, just to start, first of all, I mean, most of the domestic abuse that we've heard, you've heard about Adrian Peterson with the whipping, with the son, you heard about Ray Rice and his girlfriend. I mean, if he's coming from Charlotte, well, Vandy, I don't know where this guy's from, but wherever he's coming from, he's not from Michigan. He's coming to East Lansing. I don't think he has a son here or a baby mama here, but he's coming to East Lansing, and at 1 a.m. at a hotel, he somehow gets abuse. In my eyes, this has to be a woman. I'm sure he met some woman out, maybe at around the town, probably at some bar. He comes back, maybe he pulls that Tiger pitcher, Evan Reed. Maybe he's pulling an Evan Reed in Royal Oak, and he comes back and gets domestic abuse charges. I imagine, you know, the girl didn't want it. Maybe he throws stuff around in the room, and then mayhem ensues. Hayes, just horrible. I mean, we were just talking about the local high school football player that gets the domestic abuse charge. I think he was a Lansing Sexton or Eastern player.
That was Lansing Eastern. Yeah,
Lansing Eastern. And now we're getting domestic abuse down the street from campus. I mean, how much closer can it get?
It's on my block now, so it's some scary stuff. I don't know. This is just, first of all,
And this broke ESPN headlines already.
First of all, if Jeff Taylor is still on an NBA roster by midnight, I will be shocked. But it's just such a mess. All of this stuff, and it sounds so self-righteous and obnoxious to say it, but I mean, these guys just have to not be so crummy to other people. Like, right. Just be nice. Mm-hmm. Like, all this stuff, that's all it boils down to, is just be a decent human being for 24 hours. That's all I'm asking of all of sports. For just 24 hours, let's everybody love everybody. That's all I'm asking for.
Yeah, ELE, everybody.
Exactly.
All right, but anyway, so that's a quick news on that. Reflection Friday, 1 minute left in the show. Hayes, give us your favorite moment of the week.
My favorite moment of the week, far and away, a major, major retirement in baseball. You may have heard of him. World Series winner, fantastic player, Paul Konerko, retiring after this season.
All
done
right,
a great
Chicago
job.
Boy. Everyone, Andrew Hayes from Chicago here, so of course he gets that going.
So, yeah.
Anyways, moment of the week for me. It was awesome with Derek Jeter. We got to give Derek Jeter his hat.
Ugh.
Anyways, thank you so much for tuning in to today's Current Sports. Again, I'm Alex Shard, filling in for the dapper Al Martin, who's interviewing Jamel Hill at the MSU Union right now. You've been listening to me on Current Sports, AM 870 WKAR East Lansing, as always. Get the Alism out there, as always. Take care. Have a fantastic weekend. And be easy, people.